Get Ripple, the bright new drink with that ring-a-ding flavor, Ripple.
Okay.
All right, so.
Hello.
Hello.
We're the Ripple Podcast.
Woohoo.
It's the middle of the day. We just left a baby shower.
We did.
We're both still in our, like, baby shower outfits.
Oh, are you? You're in a giant sweatshirt, so I can't really tell.
Well, I put a sweatshirt over my booby dress.
Oh, my dress is made out of a t-shirt, so.
Mine is, too, kind of.
Oh, okay.
We're comfy.
We didn't. This is, like, attempt three, maybe, of trying to record this podcast.
Of this episode.
Last time we got all set up, we were ready to record.
We were recording.
I couldn't breathe. I was going into anaphylactic shock.
Yes.
Rosa had to be called away for an emergency chicken retrieval. So that all happened.
Yeah, I had a baby chick that didn't know how to get back in the coop with the mama. And
yeah, it was an emergency.
Nick,
you had to be there.
Was afraid that the raccoons and critters were going to come and eat it because it was crying.
I had just ingested 3 Benadryl.
Did you sleep
them up?
Did you sleep so well that night?
No, I think like I'm immune to them at this point because I take it so often.
Yeah, you were dying.
It was bad.
You were like not breathing.
Worst allergies.
Okay, well, I have a very special drink for you.
Like, yeah, this is weird.
So I'm going to hit record on our little recording device.
Your telephone?
My phone.
Is that the thing you're looking for?
Yeah.
Your cell phone? You're hitting record.
Because we have a Patreon now that I launched, kind of. I mean, we'll see if anyone looks at it. But one of the things, they can see really cool videos that we make.
Oh.
One of the, if they pay like $3 or $5 or maybe I think the max is like 10 or something. And one of they get like a prize pack, a gift pack that we'll put a bunch of crap in.
Like we're going to send them stuff
or,
Yeah, we've done that before.
Depending on like what tier level they choose. I don't really know how Patreon works.
Wait, did you
just
make all of this up?
Yes. Do you want me to tell you?
Oh, Jesus.
You haven't even seen it yet. So this is it. It's Patreon. I don't really know how you find it. I think you just have to search the Ripple Podcast. Probably people that really know about this know what they can go to. Make your first post. Become a Patreon.
Okay.
So I'm going to hit become a Patreon. And you can be a little drip for $3 a month.
What the hell is this?
How cute is that? And it's, you get exclusive episodes, a handmade thank you card.
Oh.
A Ripple Podcast sticker and an on-air shout-out.
Okay.
For the Ripples, it's a bonus exclusive episode, a handmade thank you card, a Ripple Podcast sticker, access to exclusive Ripple Podcast drink recipes because people are actually asking about that, and an on-air shout-out. But then if you want to be a Fountain, it's $13 a month. You get all that other stuff. Plus the exclusive video content and the coolest, creepiest care package. One per year. Right?
Okay, so we've got to start coming up with some great videos.
Right? But look at my little thingies I put on here. Aren't those cute?
Those are really cute.
Yeah.
We have exclusive videos from our ghost hunt from the Glen Tavern.
We do.
We also need to go to Pierpont and take some exclusive videos there.
Yeah.
Also, I just had like 3 shots of Jack Daniels on an empty stomach. So that's why today my words aren't working. I know I say that every episode.
But that's today's excuse.
That's today's excuse for why my words aren't working.
Okay, well, it's going to work even less because I'm going to make you a drink.
Okay.
And so in front of you, if you are watching on camera, you are seeing my little, what is that called? Like a
craft?
Craft?
No, is that what it's called?
No, craft is you pour. This is like a fountainy one.
It's a beverage dispenser. And it has a little tap thing at the bottom.
And I'm getting out this.
Oh, Ashes is very excited by that noise.
Hi. It's not cookies. It's not. This is a special little glass.
Oh. Whoa. I feel like I'm at a Catholic church right now. Are you showing everybody how dirty my coffee table is?
No, I'm editing that part out.
Okay.
Can you read for the Ripplers what that is?
This is, and I know where this is from too.
Vampas.
Rosa has a bottle of why does it say Abstein? I think it's absinthe. absinthe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's they H. just. Oh, okay, I thought
that's
it was
a,
an N.
It's a.
Rosa has a bottle of the Green Fairy. Oh, this is going to be bad. Are you sleeping the afternoon off on my couch?
So I learned how to make this.
I learned how to make it there, too. That's how I learned about it.
And
so great.
I got to open it. I wasn't really prepared.
Do you have sugar cubes?
I have everything.
Oh, I'm really excited right now.
Smell that.
Okay, it doesn't smell great. Oh, it, I think smells like good. Black licorice.
So the tools that you need for an absinthe, like the traditional drinking of absinthe, is fine absinthe, which we have. This is actually an absinthe glass.
Oh.
So you could get like a wine glass, but the absinthe glasses have like markers on it. So I know where to pour it.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
You're supposed to have an absinthe spoon.
Okay, yeah.
Which I have.
Oh, wow. That's a fancy spoon.
It was the cheapest one.
Oh, it's pretty though. Oh, wow. You even have like the special kind of. Yeah, because isn't it, like, super fine? Because I tried making it, like, because I bought the same thing from Von Voss, like, years ago. And I tried using regular sugar cubes, but the sugar was, like, too coarse.
Oh.
And it just kind of, like, settled out. It didn't really dissolve.
And then that is the ice-cold water in the dispenser.
Okay.
So it says the absinthe spoon is the most unique tool as it consists of a flat perforated trowel-like tool with a small indented area in the handle to hold it in place on the edge of the glass. The perforations allow the water and melting sugar to pass into the glass of absinthe below. Okay, so I didn't test this. I didn't try this ahead of time. So we'll see how it works.
Because you want like little tiny drips, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, there you go. Is that too much?
It's probably going a little fast.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Well, I'll do it every so often.
Okay.
So what's going to happen is it's going to mix with the kind of greenish yellowish absinthe and kind of create like an opalescent milky
look. I've never heard that word before in my life.
Opalescent?
I'm assuming it's opal-like?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sure. So... Okay.
I always thought absinthe was supposed to make you trip balls, but well, it doesn't really.
If you watch Moulin Rouge.
If you watch Eurotrip.
Oh, yes.
You drink some absinthe, you make out with your sister.
You made out with your sister.
God, that's such a good movie.
So good. But do you see how it's changing kind of whitish now?
Yeah, we've got some separation going on. There's like a weird green layer.
Because that's the botanicals, the oils. And the botanicals in the absinthe. I learned so much about this drink.
Huh.
Okay.
But it's not made with wormwood.
It is.
It is made with wormwood.
Mm-hmm.
So then what was in it that made you trip balls?
I will tell you all about it.
Oh, is that what you're doing your story on?
I am doing my story on absinthe. Our podcast is, what are our five things? Murders, mysteries.
I don't even know anymore.
Medical oddities.
Conspiracy theory,
and paranormal. I'm hitting four of the five in this.
Oh, okay.
So I've got some medical oddities. I've got some kind of mystery. I've got a murder, and I've got, what was the other one?
Conspiracy theories.
Yeah, that one.
Okay.
No paranormal.
Oh, no, so, little green fairies.
Well, I guess sure if you want to include that. What do you think of it?
Are we still recording?
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. So Rosa handed me the shot glass. And for those of you who aren't level whatever Patreon members.
Fountains.
If you're not a fountain. If you're just a drain right now. So it's this kind of cloudy, white, slightly yellowish, and not the most appealing looking color liquid.
No, if your pee looks like that color, you might need to go to the doctor.
Yeah, you need to go to the hospital right away. But it tastes like, it's very licorice-y. It definitely has that like anise flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But it tastes just like, what are the, good and, is it Good and Plenty?
Uh-huh, totally.
Good and Plenty. It's those terrible candies.
I love them.
That are those little tablet shapes that, for whatever reason, they sell at the movies, even though I don't think anybody ever buys them.
They're pink and white, and they're so good.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what it tastes like.
It's a sipper.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't be doing shots of this one.
I like it.
I mean, it's good, but I think, like, a lot of the appeal is that it's absinthe, and there's, like, something kind of strange and unusual about absinthe that's got a... Oh, sorry, Cole's trying to drink my drink.
Not for puppies. Okay, well, I'm going to tell you what absinthe is. So absinthe...
This is not going to go well.
You know that absinthe is, like, 60 to 70% alcohol?
Oh, is that why they have to pour water in it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I did not know that.
Okay, so what is absinthe? Absinthe originated in Switzerland and was later popularized in France among the early 20th century by, like, the Bohemians, apparently, like, specifically. What's a Bohemian?
I was just going to ask you that.
Not like the boho.
It's like a really kind of country chic sort of style.
With more of like
hippie. It's like Coachella wear, like Coachella style. That's Bohemian.
That's,
you know,
totally.
Like a lot of crocheted knit, like, crop tops and, like, beads and braids.
What are those, that class I took that I did terrible at where you do all the knots?
What is that called?
I want to say lattice. It's not lattice.
What is it? It starts with the M?
Macrame.
Macrame.
Yeah, that. In the late 1800s, absinthe was the best-selling before dinner drink in much of the civilized world. So this would be like your appetizer.
Oh, no. I think that's a bad idea.
This is like your palate cleanser before dinner.
No, I think it would ruin your palate.
And it's high in alcohol. Like, the average absinthe is around 136 proof.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm, a lot. So most liquors have, like, a high sugar, low alcohol content, but absinthe is the high proof, bitter, and, like, super herbally liquor, and it's kind of got that greenish yellow tint, and I was telling you before that it's made from, like, the botanicals, and this is a quote. It says, it's made by steeping 15 herbs in neutral grape spirits for 8 days and then redistilling the concoction. Among the 15 herbs in absinthe, are dried flowers and leaves of wormwood, which you already talked about. And wormwood, it grows about 3 feet high, and it's botanically related to the southwestern sagebrush. So for a long time, there were many French physicians and biologists that thought that the wormwood plant was deadly. And in German, the word wormwood is wermut, W-E-R-M-U-T, or vermouth.
Oh.
And the Latin word for wormwood is Artemisia absinthesium.
Sure.
And that's kind of where the word absinthe itself comes from.
Okay.
So I'm just giving you a little history on, like, the drink itself. And then wormwood itself contains something called fuja, but it's spelled T-H-U-J-O-N-E. But I had to do it phonetically on here. This is the fuja tree. And that's what actually led to its ban for over 100 years in the United States and many other countries.
That particular
herb or botanical or plant.
Really? Mm-hmm. I always thought it was the wormwood.
It's the fuja.
Fuja. All right.
So it's the oily substance that you kind of noticed, like, in the separation of the drink, that has a methanol. No, not methanol.
Menthol.
No, not menthol. Menthol.
Menthol.
Menthol fragrance. And is used to improve mental clarity.
Oh, okay.
Traces occur in common herbs such as cilantro and tarragon. And you know there are some people that, like, they taste cilantro and it tastes soapy to them?
Yes, it's a genetic thing.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if this is similar. I love cilantro, but I also love black licorice. So... in large quantities, it can be toxic. However, in large quantities, so can alcohol. So only there's, like, small traces of the fuja are found in absinthe, and it's no longer scientifically considered to render the liquor unsafe, and it does not cause hallucinations any more than just generally being drunk.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I already have some theories going on in my head that I've heard previously, but I don't know if I want to say them because you might talk about them.
Okay.
Like what actually caused people to hallucinate? Or should we wait?
It's up to you.
Okay. Did
I know.
Words. Wasn't it actually determined to be like the process of that little drip thing that caused people to trip balls? Because like the spoon was made out of some heavy metal.
I have, out of all of these different articles I read, I did not hear that anywhere.
Really? Okay.
And I went to Atlas Obscura, Wikipedia, Pickled Plum, LA Times, BBC, Murderpedia, and Santa Fe Reporter, and listened to a couple podcasts.
Maybe I'm making it all up.
No, that sounds like a really good theory, but because of the heavy metals and stuff.
Yeah, I thought like the process of doing that little drip thing where you like dissolve the sugar on the slotted spoon, that it contained like lead or like some sort of like thing that you don't want to actually consume. And I mean, that's what was causing people to get like hallucinogen cheese brain.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's see. So most people describe the flavor of absinthe like fennel or black licorice, but there's also hints of peppermint. Do you get that?
Mm-hmm.
Coriander. I don't really know what coriander tastes like. Hyssop, lemon balm.
I don't even know what that is. What the hell is a hyssop?
I don't know. It's a really fun word to say though. Angelica and Veronica.
Hey, that's me.
It tastes just like you.
It tastes a little bit like Listerine. I'd like to throw that in there and on my tasting notes.
So when you add the water to the absinthe, it's reducing like the high proof of it, but it's also supposed to be enhancing and opening up the flavors.
Okay, so like when you put a couple drops of water into whiskey,
it
like opens it up.
Uh-huh, exactly. So during La Belle Époque,
what is that?
That's
is
some
that
French a time? Thing. No, it's a term given to the period of the French and European history.
Oh, jeez.
It usually dates between like 1871 to 1880.
Yeah, I totally knew all about that.
Also, it's the outbreak of World War One.
Oh, shit.
Absinthe was incredibly popular among European artists, writers, and socialites.
Hemingway.
Hemingway, as well as Van Gogh and Toulouse-Lautrec, Monet, Degas, Picasso, all those fancy artists. And
super artsy people.
Yeah.
I think they were probably bohemian too, maybe.
They probably did a lot of macrame. There's a good chance that if, you know, something was like painted or written around that time, that absinthe may have given those artists some extra creativity assistance.
Would you say that absinthe was their muse?
It could be. A lot of those people, so like...
Oh, you didn't get my joke. Oh. You're not on TikTok enough.
Oh, no. Mm-mm.
Okay, sorry. No. Moving on.
Okay. Next.
So, chums.
Van Gogh, Monet, Degas, Picasso, they all actually painted people drinking absinthe. And they all, if you look at those paintings, and I meant to actually send them to you so you could look at them, but I'll post them on Instagram. They all kind of look like sad or alone or just like deep in thought. And they have like this green like glass of absinthe next to them. And one person described it like all of these people have just seen too much because of the absinthe. So Oscar Wilde said about absinthe, quote, "The first glass, you see things as you wish they were.
Okay.
The second glass, they are, you see them as they are not.
Wow.
And then the third, as they really are," which is like the scariest glass of all. It's kind of like the whole like red pill, blue pill from like The Matrix. Like, which one do you want? Do you want to actually see things? Or do you want to see things as you want to see them?
Is that what that means?
The red pill, blue pill.
I was just like making choices. I don't know.
Let's ponder.
Adam's shaking his head like we don't know anything at all.
I've never seen The Matrix. I just know about the red pill and the blue pill.
The face he just made.
That I've never seen The Matrix. Is that bad? Should I see The Matrix?
Oh. I just don't know if you should be using it as an example.
Yeah, it's a red pill, blue pill. I know that much. No? No. I don't know.
I think that could be said about a lot of drinking like in general.
In here,
like,
yeah.
You drink your first glass, you're in a good, happy mood. You drink your second glass, I don't know. Like, your mood is going to start to change. Like, it's like, okay, level one, I'm happy, I'm thrilled. Level two, I start saying things that I might regret in the morning. Level three, I'm in the fetal position crying in the bathroom.
But Oscar Wilde was saying that in level three or glass three, you see things as they really are. Like, your eyes are opened. You're seeing the reality. It's not like a facade anymore.
Huh. Okay.
So you mentioned about Hemingway. So that's in like the 1940s in Spain. He actually wrote about absinthe in his novel For Whom the Bell Tolls. And he wrote, quote, "That opaque, bitter, tongue-numbing, brain-warming, stomach-warming, idea-changing liquid alchemy." So it's this liquid that is like a fortune teller.
Huh. Okay.
All right, so that's just a little history of the absinthe there. So now we're getting into the murder.
Oh, yes.
Did you forget about that?
Yeah, actually. I didn't realize that was in like one of your five things or whatever.
Because I'm doing a lot of history too.
Okay.
So this guy named Jean Lefray, spelled G-E-A-N, but pronounced Jean.
Oh, Jean.
So he was the 31-year-old laborer who was born in France, but he was living in Switzerland at the time of this story. Okay. Uh-huh. So he lived on the second floor of a farmhouse. Uh-huh. On the first floor lived his parents and his brother, Paul. So this one morning, Jean woke up. He got dressed. He poured himself a glass of absinthe and water. And he told his wife to polish his boots because he was going to go out mushroom hunting the next day, which I didn't really understand. Like, why would you polish your boots before you go out, like, tromping through the mud? Mm. But maybe he just wanted to look nice.
Maybe.
So
dress for the job you want, not the job you have.
Okay. Maybe that was his mindset. So he walks out the door and he begins his morning chores. And he says, quote, "Don't forget to wax my boots," Lefray repeated, "and make it good, you hear?" He then had a second glass of absinthe.
Dang.
So, I mean, that was kind of like the coffee, I think, for him.
For him specifically?
Well, I don't know. Of the time, maybe. So Jean went to check on the farm animals, and he comes back to the house to have breakfast with his brother and his father before the three men started their walk into the village where they were working. When Jean returns home, his wife asked him to go to milk the cows. They have 20 cows and like...
Oh, that's a long day.
And he started his day at 4:30 in the morning.
Oh.
They have 20 cows that need to be milked because they take the milk to the creamery and sell it. And he tells her, quote, "Go to hell and go milk them yourself."
See, this is when like the alcohol hits you and you start being like,
but he's home. His
completely
day's done.
Uncensored.
Oh, he went to work. He came back home.
Nobody milked the cows all day.
Well, his day ended at 4:30 as well. It went from like 4:30 to 4:30.
That's a long time. Like, I feel like those cows need to be milked.
Probably.
Their udders are probably pretty tender.
So he then tells his wife to make him some coffee, which she did. Jean got his coffee and he added something called Marc to it, which is like a home-brewed brandy.
Just not, no milk? Not going to squirt any milk in there?
No.
Okay.
That would probably curdle it. His wife goes out to milk the cows. She has two kids at home too, by the way. So she's been like doing all the household chores, taking care of the kids. She's also 4 months pregnant.
Oh, geez.
And now she's going to milk 20 cows.
Well, she's got to have another kid to start milking those cows.
Or she's milking herself.
Ew.
So he comes back, or she comes back inside to tell Jean that she's going to head to the creamery to sell the milk. And he starts complaining to her that the coffee that she made earlier wasn't hot enough.
Okay.
And they start arguing, and as they're arguing, Jean notices his boots that were, like, under the coffee table, and he sees that they had not been cleaned or polished, and he starts really getting pissed and yelling at her.
Wait, but didn't he already take them mushroom hunting?
No, that was the next day.
He
wanted them ready for the next day.
Got it.
So this whole time, Jean's father was upstairs hanging out with him, and he's like, this is getting a little uncomfortable. This is my cue to leave. And he says goodbye to his daughter-in-law and his daughter. And the wife just shrugs at him. And this pisses Jean off even more. And he's like, show my dad some respect and actually give him a proper farewell. Like, say goodbye and don't just shrug your shoulders at him. And Jean just flies into a rage. And she at the time starts getting pissed too. And she's like, I'm done with this. I'm frustrated. I'm not going to have to say goodbye if I don't want to. Jean then, you know, obviously because of the times, he wasn't really used to a woman arguing with him. And he tells her to shut up. And she challenges him with, quote, I'd like to see you make me.
Ooh.
And he says back, you would you? And he grabs his old rifle, which is like a long-barreled bolt-action repeater that took a magazine of 12 cartridges. And Jean's father says, like, hey, don't do anything foolish. And Jean tells him to stay out of it unless he wants trouble himself. Jean then fired his gun at his pregnant wife's head, killed her instantly. Jean's father runs out of the house to get help, and startled by the gunshot, their 4-year-old daughter, Rose, comes into the room.
Oh, no.
Jean aims his gun at her and fires.
Oh, why?
He then walks to the crib where his 2-year-old daughter, Blanche, was sleeping and shot
Not
her.
Blanche.
Blanche and Rose, like from the Golden Girls.
Oh.
Then the next shot was for himself. But we're going to go back to the Nirvana episode when there's the whole conspiracy about how the rifle was too long for him to actually shoot himself.
Yeah.
Because he tried to aim the rifle at his head, but he couldn't fire it because it was too long. So
when you use your toe.
He got a string and tied it to the trigger, pressed it like behind the trigger bar, and then held the free end of the string with one hand and the rifle by the barrel with the other hand. And this made it so he could aim the gun at his head and pull the trigger.
Okay.
And as he did this, he missed. And the bullet lodged into his jaw, which kept him alive.
Wait, but the downstairs family members, where are they?
Well, the dad ran out of the house, like, as soon as he saw him shoot his wife to go get help.
Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. He probably wouldn't be sticking around. But it's weird that they have, like, this whole, like, verbatim conversation on record.
Well, they interviewed the dad.
Okay.
The dad that witnessed it all.
That's a lot of detail.
So Jean grabs the lifeless body of his youngest daughter from the crib and heads outside to the garden by the barn where he collapses holding his daughter's body. The police come because, like, the father had called them, and they see him laying on the ground. Jean was arrested and taken to the hospital where he recovered from the self-inflicted gunshot wound. They removed the bullet. And then he was also taken to see the bodies of his family members in their coffins. And there was a nurse that, like, is the one that took him there named Marie Blasser. And she says that he wept and moaned over and over, quote, it is not me who did this. Tell me, oh God, please tell me that I have not done this. I loved my wife and my children so much. And Jean just insisted that he did not remember anything about these murders. So then, shortly after, a trial started for the murder of Jean's pregnant wife and 2 daughters. And it began on February 23rd, 1906, and ended that very same day.
Oh, wow.
Jean's attorneys argued that the 2 ounces of absinthe he consumed prior to the murders was to blame for his actions.
No.
They suggested that Jean was overcome by the vicious, inescapable tendencies brought on by this dangerous substance. And this doctor, Dr. Albert Mayhem, he was a leading Swiss psychologist. He testified that Jean Lafray suffered from, quote, a classic case of absinthe madness.
But he was drinking absinthe all the time, it sounds like.
Like, he started his day with it?
Yeah, like it
was a normal thing for him?
Right.
Well, maybe it, like, accumulated in his brain and just made him go crazy. Or, if you're the prosecutor, Alfred Albrecht, he argued that the 2 ounces of absinthe he had ingested were minor in relation to the large amount of other alcoholic beverages he had consumed that day.
Right, because didn't you say, like, he, no, with his coffee, he had that other stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And he started his day with absinthe, and now it's like he started his day at what, like 4 a.m. and now it's like 4 p.m. right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No,
So on the way to work around 5:30, he passed a bar and went inside. There, Jean had a cream de menthe and some cognac and sodas before leaving to begin his shift.
He had a grasshopper. Ew.
During his lunch break, Jean had a bread, cheese, and sausage sandwich.
Ooh, that sounds good.
And 3 glasses of wine.
Okay.
At 3 p.m., Jean took a wine break where he had 2 more glasses of wine.
Oh, I wish wine breaks were a real thing.
An hour and a half later, another glass of wine was given to him by a neighbor. And apparently in this time, and I'll kind of get into that a little bit more too, but like wine was way stronger than like a normal glass of wine like today, because so much of it was being home brewed.
Okay.
And yeah. So they couldn't like regulate how much alcohol it really was. So it was a lot of the times a lot stronger than normal. So by 4:30, his workday was done and the 3 men met up again for coffee and brandy. Back home, Jean and his father had each around 1 liter of wine.
Holy shit, that's a lot of wine.
So in total, he consumed, that was fine, 7 glasses of wine, 6 glasses of cognac, 1 coffee with brandy, 2 cream de menthe, along with the 2 glasses of absinthe. Go ahead.
That's like okay, I understand there's a lot of people who are like functioning alcoholics and they can drink a lot of like, they can drink like a freaking handle of Jack Daniels or whatever. But he's mixing freaking creme de menthe with like a liter wine. Of wine and then absinthe and then brandy. Like, how is he cognac. Not just like projectile vomiting everywhere?
It's a lot. So Jean was found guilty on 3 counts of murder and received a punishment of 30 years imprisonment. Because he was so intoxicated at the time of the murders, he did not face capital punishment. Which I don't really see how that...
No. Because if I get drunk and then I go, like, plow down a bunch of people in the street, I can't just say, oh, sorry, guys, I was drunk.
Yeah.
Like, you still have to take responsibility for your actions regardless of your... It's not like somebody is force intoxicating you, you know? Like, you're doing that on your own.
Yeah. I thought that was a strange little fact. But on February 26, 1906, 3 days after the trial, Jean Lafray was found dead, hanging in his prison cell.
Oh.
Is it he hung himself or he hanged himself?
It's hanged, and it always bothers me that it's Why? Hanged. Why is that? Know. I don't know. They always say that about people. Like, a picture was hung, a person was hanged.
I know. It doesn't sound right to me.
I don't know.
So Jean was found hanging.
Okay. We'll go with that.
This murder case received a huge amount of coverage from the press, especially by Europe's temperance movement. Do you know what that is?
Nope.
It's the social movement against consuming alcohol.
Oh.
Kind of like the beginning of prohibition.
Okay.
And absinthe was kind of like the scapegoat. No, scapegoat? The blame. Absinthe was like the blame for all of this.
Yeah, that works.
It was getting... you know, the blame for these murders. It wasn't all the other alcohol. It was mainly absinthe. So in an article written by Maurice Zoloteau in 1971, it says, quote, on August 28th, 1905, Jean Lafray, a vineyard worker and day laborer in the little village of Camaraderie, sure, Switzerland, awoke at 4:30 in the morning. He began his day with his usual eye-opener, a shot of absinthe, to which he added 3 parts of water. Before the day was over, Lafray would commit a series of horrible murders, and ultimately, he would bring about the downfall of a $100 million industry.
He ruined it for everyone.
It was his fault. 100%.
What a
All
dick.
Him. This focus on absinthe being evil and causing a man to murder his family started a petition to ban absinthe in Switzerland. So again, they're just saying, like, not about all these other drinks. It's just how bad absinthe is. Absinthe is terrible. It made this man murder to his families. And they're just talking about what a good person he was, what a good family man he was. You know, he was a hard worker. He lived with, you know, his other family downstairs and just like had him up on this pedestal. But because of the absinthe, he became a horrible, horrible person. So they started this petition to ban absinthe in Switzerland. And that petition received over 82,000 signatures. And many of the signatures were from women who at the time didn't even have the right to vote. So they're just like getting these. And this is like the time before, like, you know, change.org. You know, you can just email anybody and get a bunch of signatures. So 82,000 signatures is a lot.
Yeah. But also 82,000 signatures at that time, like, could you really verify them?
Well, like I said, a lot of them were from women. So those ones technically didn't even count.
Just throw those away.
Yeah. Erase those. So this, quote, absinthe outrage continued and in 1908, a vote was completed and the decision was made to ban absinthe in all of Switzerland. And then it was banned in most of the European countries. But it wasn't banned in the UK and Sweden or in Spain. And it was banned in the United States before World War I began. So Spain never banned absinthe and continued producing good products of it, like quality. Eastern Europe, however, began like just churning out these lower quality versions. And many of it didn't even contain like the wormwood. So it was kind of like if you see absinthe, like kind of like you were saying, like on Eurotrip or even on Moulin Rouge, it had that like bright green.
Yeah, like glowing.
If you see that, that's totally just added color to it. It's not real. And then that whole little green fairy, which you see in like a lot of the movies, is the English translation of the French La Fée Verte, which I guess is like, or La Fée Verte, like green, the green fairy. So like to these original artists and free thinkers back in the late 1800s, the green fairy may have been like a metaphor for enlightenment and transformation. And on a lot of the bottles or in a lot of the places that sold absinthe, that was kind of the mascot. You'd see like the poster in the wall or the little green fairy on the bottles. So the phrase, I wish I spoke French, but I'm going to slaughter all of these words, but it's La Hurie Verte, or like translated into the green hour, was born. And many historians consider that phrase to be the birth concept of the modern day happy hour.
Oh.
Like the green hour, the happy hour.
Huh. Okay.
So.
And that makes sense too, because it was like you said, a before dinner drink. Mm-hmm. And that's like before dinner time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So in 2008, so not that long ago, the ban of absinthe was finally lifted in the U.S. So there's several absinthe producers in this country, including New Mexico. And remember I was saying how Van Gogh shot himself in 1890? He was, you know, he committed suicide. He was a big absinthe drinker.
Uh-huh.
His doctor at the time, named Paul Gratchett, he was the one that kind of cared for Van Gogh. He actually planted a fuchsia tree on his grave, and it's said that the fuchsia roots actually surrounded his casket.
How would they know that?
I mean,
it's a cool idea.
It's a fun story.
I like it. I want to see what a fuchsia tree looks like.
Yeah, maybe we should plant some.
Do I need to grow one?
Yeah. I mean, you're growing, what are they, electric buttons?
I'm growing, yeah. I don't know if we've talked about that on this podcast.
Let's talk about it right now.
Oh, you want to?
Sure.
I don't want to interrupt your story.
I only have a little more. You're fine.
Okay, so I'm growing this thing called electric buttons. And it is, I guess it's kind of like a novelty herb, right? Would you call it that?
Yeah, like remember, I don't know if people listening know what miracle berries are, but that's what it reminds me of. It's absolutely a novelty.
Yeah.
Novelty, kind of a fun, herb.
Yeah. So the point of it is to like make your taste buds do weird, crazy things. So as you chew on the flower and kind of like move it around your tongue and coat your taste buds, it kind of creates this kind of like shocking effect, almost like a lot of people describe it as like a pop rock sort of thing.
Or I heard someone describe it as like, you have 9-volt batteries. Yeah, in your mouth,
that part doesn't sound very fun. But it's supposed to change the way your taste buds respond to things. So things that are super, super sour taste totally different once you've coated your mouth with this.
It's
flower.
A flower, right?
It is a flower. Yeah, it's a flower. It's weird. So I don't know. Maybe we need to start growing more cocktail plants.
I think
why
it
not?
Sounds really fun. So there was a whole bunch of, you know, like I said before, artists and writers that just really were fans of absinthe. And I'm going to just tell you a little bit more about what Hemingway invented. He invented a drink.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Yes. He invented a drink called Death in the Afternoon.
Oh, that sounds like a good time right there.
Maybe we can add this in our special drink list that we send to people. But he says it's pour one jigger absinthe into a champagne glass. And I heard actually champagne and absinthe is a really good drink.
Ooh.
Instead of using water, you can use champagne.
I mean, champagne instead of water always sounds like a good time.
I agree. Add the iced champagne until it attains the proper opalescent milkiness. Hey, you said you never heard that word before. I didn't make it up. It is a real word, opalescent.
Hmm.
Drink 3 to 5 of these slowly.
Holy shit.
There was a writer in 1989 named Poppy Z. Bright, and they said, quote, "The absinthe cauterized my throat with its flavor, part pepper, part licorice, part rot." Is that how it tasted to you? No?
I also don't like the use of the term cauterized as like a pleasant thing, because well, that just like makes me think of burning flesh,
and I think that's what they're trying to say. It wasn't a good experience for them. So I'm just going to kind of end our little story here with some of the popular, maybe more cultural references. So we already said Eurotrip, one of our favorite movies of all time. If you have not seen Eurotrip yet, watch it now. It's fantastic. Mad Men episodes it's been in. It was in a Marilyn Manson, I guess, endorsed signature brand. It was in, his signature brand was called Mansinth. So I guess he was making his own absinthe.
Huh. Okay.
Frankie Ocean is like a singer. And it was called a Pyramid. It was in Moulin Rouge. And then also Nine Inch Nails did a song, and their entire video, it was like green looking, like it had a green filter over it.
And it was supposed to be
absinthe.
Oh, all right. I mean, I don't know a ton about Marilyn Manson or Nine Inch Nails, but
you know Moulin Rouge and
Eurotrip. Yeah. I know those ones. I know those ones.
All right. Do you want to do last thought in a shot?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait. Go.
Okay. Are you ready to play Two Truths and a Lie?
I am going to win this time.
This is going to be the hallucination. Why does that word sound so weird to me?
Because you've had so much absinthe and you're probably hallucinating.
This is the hallucination version. I really wanted to try to find that story that I was remembering about how it was like heavy metal toxicity that caused people to have hallucinations when they were drinking absinthe, but I could not find it. So if I find it, I'll...
Find it.
I'll bring it next time we record. But I did find a lot of fun little factoids about hallucinations, and you're going to tell me which one's a lie.
Okay? I'm going to get it right for the first time.
Okay, number one.
Go.
Phantom phone vibrations are becoming an incredibly common hallucination.
Mm-hmm.
Number two. Scrolling. Being tired and alone can make you hallucinate.
Okay.
Number three. There is a hallucinogenic fish swimming around the oceans right now. Okay.
Wait, a hallucinogenic fish?
Yes.
Like you lick it and you hallucinate?
I couldn't give you any more detail. It's two truths and a lie.
Okay. Like a frog, you know, like the frogs that
people.
We should have talked about that.
Lick on The Simpsons.
Yeah, I think that's a real thing. And number four, alcohol with natural substance.
Wait, number four, it's two truths and one lie.
Oh, shoot. Number four, this is three truths and a lie. Sorry. Alcohol with natural substances similar to LSD may have created the witch hysteria.
Mm-hmm. I kind of want to go with the fish because I'm just not really sure what that is. Like, maybe if you eat that fish, you hallucinate.
I don't know. Maybe you juice it. Maybe. I mean, what?
Put it in a Vitamix. I would assume
it's eating it, right? Because the other options are what? Touching it, looking at it, smell. I mean, yeah, it's got to be eating it, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go with that one.
You're going to go with that one?
Mm-hmm.
That one is true.
Of course it is. I'm always wrong. Of course it is. Is it the witch one that's the lie?
Yeah, it's the
witch. Because that's like a religious thing.
What do you mean?
Like the religion is kind of what caused the mass hysteria, not alcohol.
And well, this particular theory, because I only changed one detail about this story,
mm-hmm.
is bread with a substance similar to LSD may have created the witch hysteria.
Bread. Like it was yeast or moldy.
Exactly. It was ergot poisoning, which is a natural hallucinogen similar to LSD. And that is,
I heard
it's
that
a
word.
Mold. Yeah, you're totally right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mold on the cereal grains that they used to make the bread that caused people to trip balls.
So I wonder, you know how like even in during like COVID times when people were like making sourdough at home and everything, like that was the thing to do.
How many people poisoned themselves?
Yeah. Or like a while ago, the whole friendship bread, remember people were doing that and you had to have it in a Ziploc
bag.
That
was creepy. I did not want to share my yeast with friends.
Okay. So if you become a Patreon in the $13 level, we'll send you some of our friendship bread starter kit.
I don't want to be responsible for killing somebody.
Oh, yeah. That probably wouldn't be a good
thing.
Wait, what were the first two? I forgot already.
Okay. Yeah. So let me scroll up. So the first
one of these days, I'm going to get it right.
Yeah. Because you get it right every time. I had to add an extra one because I was going through like my list here and like telling you facts. And then I'm like, shoot, I need to change one and make it a lie. So then you got three truths and a lie.
That's not how the game works.
It's a little bit harder that way. Okay. So phantom phone vibrations are becoming an incredibly common hallucination.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I could totally see that. I feel like I even get that sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I totally get that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I that one, I totally believe.
And my watch vibrates as well when I get alerts. So I sometimes even feel like it's on my wrist.
Yeah. Phantom wrist vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
The next one was being tired and alone can make you hallucinate.
Oh, you're tired. You hallucinate. Didn't
but you act like that happens all the time.
No, Dad. I know that Dad did that when he was out doing, like, staying up for hours and hours doing the wind machines and stuff. And he didn't sleep. He saw that, like, a gate that wasn't there.
I did not know about
that. Yeah, he did that.
But you are right. Yeah, I have heard. I was thinking, like, just, I'm kind of tired. But no, that's, like, actual sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
That's, like, going back to the last episode, the ghost plane thing. People would have hallucinations in World War II or probably other serious military conflicts as well, where they were flying for hours and hours and hours and they couldn't sleep and they would start seeing shit like outside the windows on the wings and stuff.
Oh my gosh, that would be so scary.
Right? And now?
For something entirely new and different.
A hallucinogenic fish.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to have to read this one because I had never heard anything about it until right now. So some may have heard of a fish, no, I haven't, that was once used to cause hallucinations and figured it was overfished. Otherwise, people would have been using it all the time. However, there's a reason that people don't tend to try to use the sarpa salpa.
That's a fun word. Sarpa salpa.
Yeah. In order to see the universe. The problem is that while ingesting this fish can cause you to hallucinate,
The hallucinations are known to be almost universally unpleasant and come with awful nightmares attached, and they often last for days at a time. That's fucking scary.
That's terrible. And when you're saying like it's being overfished and people, you know, hallucinated and stuff. Why is that word so hard to say? I was like just thinking too, like remember in the story, the murder story, like Jean is going out to hunt mushrooms. I wonder if he was going out to look for hallucinating mushrooms, like those kind of mushrooms.
Why didn't we think about that earlier in your story?
I don't know.
It was right there all along.
It was. That was the answer. He took some magic mushrooms.
That's what happened.
We just solved the mystery. It wasn't absinthe.
We solved our first case.
It was mushrooms.
Who do we tell?
Well, he's dead. And it happened in like the early 1900s, 1890s.
Okay. Good side about it, bad side about it. Bad side, yeah, everybody's dead, nobody cares. But good side, like, we could totally Wikipedia this. We can, like, go on Wikipedia and say that we solved this crime.
Copywritten, nobody's the Ripple
gonna,
podcast.
Who's going to question us?
Who's going to know?
Nobody's going to know. Yeah, so that's weird.
Yeah.
Fish.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's...
But terrible hallucinations.
But I wonder if it evolved to be that way. Like, what if it was, like, some sort of evolutionary advantage that, like, you eat one of us, we're going to haunt your nightmares
for
2 days.
We're going to fuck you up.
And you're never going to want to eat another one of us.
Yeah, I mean, I was never into the whole, like, hallucinating drugs stuff. That scares me.
No, me neither. I'm too much of a baby.
I know some people like it.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
I would, and I mentioned this on another episode, I would do the whole ayahuasca special K or whatever you call that one.
Those are two very different things.
Which is the one that makes you, like, see the world, the universe. That's ayahuasca.
Doesn't it also make you shit for days?
I don't know. There's one of them that you go to the doctor and you have, like, a very small amount of it. And
that's ketamine.
No. One of them.
That's one that you want to do.
One of them that you're like in a safe spot. And you could just like see the universe.
Adam says it's DMT. But I don't think we've ever talked about that on this podcast.
We did.
We did?
Yeah. Didn't you say like the teen moms do it?
That's ketamine.
Oh. I don't know where I got ayahuasca from then. Isn't that what they did on Weeds?
I never liked that show.
Oh, I love that show. So good.
So.
Anyways. Know. What are you going to talk about next week? Do you know?
Yes.
This was a listener request, by the way.
Oh, really?
It was. Yes. Yeah. So when not the murders, they wanted to hear about absinthe itself. And I tied in the murders with it.
Okay. Next week, we're going to talk about TikTok.
Oh.
Yep.
Do I need to catch up on my TikToks?
You might want to. You know, might want to see what's going on for you. Have you been following the Modern Warrior Chelsea saga?
Nope.
You have no idea what I'm talking about.
Nope.
Oh man, it's good. But yeah, this is it's something that was trending on TikTok that was sent to me, and we're gonna talk about it.
All right.
Okay.
Should I be like researching this, or should I stay away from it?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
I'm gonna give you the ripple effect of this TikTok episode. I don't know.
Not hallucination.
I'm hallucinating. I think it's time to wrap it up.
All right. Until then, don't forget to be a absinthe fountain
and not a Patreon drip.
Bye.
Bye.